Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
If the legislation currently under consideration were adopted, Alaska would have the most progressive sales tax in the country by an enormous margin.
Lawmakers discuss the possibility of introducing new taxes. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, April 24th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, as wildfire seasons grow more intense, researchers want to provide better air quality data.
People can't make even basic daily decisions because they don't have access to that information.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by SNAP.
For the first time in recent history, Alaska legislators in both parties and the governor are talking about implementing a broad-based tax. New taxes aren't likely to pass this session, but Alaskans could start paying statewide sales or an income tax in the next few years. Many lawmakers say the looming budget deficit makes taxes necessary to keep paying for state services. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan asked economists to explain the pros and cons of a sales tax versus an income tax and has this story.
Brett Watson, an economics professor at UAA's Institute for Social and Economic Research, says neither is great, economically speaking.
Income taxes at the margin reduce people's incentive to work. Sales taxes at the margin reduce people's incentive to spend. And generally speaking, we want people in the economy to work and we want people in the economy to spend money.
But Watson says taxes are also necessary to pay for things that residents want, given the reality of a gaping $800 million budget hole. More and more state lawmakers, Republicans, and Democrats agree. Even Governor Mike Dunleavy, who's long been resistant to any new taxes, told lawmakers he's working on a sales tax proposal. Nolan Clauda, director of the Institute of Social and Economic Research, says there are advantages to sales taxes.
A sales tax is, of course, a very efficient way of collecting tax revenue that doesn't tend to distort economic incentives too much.
In non-economics speak, sales taxes don't take a lot of complicated bureaucracy to implement, and they don't tend to change how people buy. But they are regressive. That means poorer people are hit harder.
It does have the trade-off of being somewhat regressive. You know, lower income earners generally are going to pay a higher share of their income in taxes than with a progressive income tax, for example.
That's because they still have to pay for essential products like groceries and gas. Jared Walczak, a researcher with the Washington, D.C.-based Tax Foundation, says there are ways to make sales taxes less regressive. A big one, taxing services like manicures and oil changes, not just goods.
And we know that higher earners consume more in the services side. This is also going to apply to a lot of things like memberships, you know, the gym membership, all of the memberships that you might have.
An analysis by Walczak's right-leaning group found a 2.3% tax on most goods and services could earn the state up to $850 million. Basically enough to fill the projected budget gap. That's what a bill from Representative Ben Carpenter, a Nikiski Republican, proposes. Walczak says a sales tax that includes nearly all services would make Alaska unique in the nation.
If the legislation currently under consideration were adopted, Alaska would have the most progressive sales tax in the country by an enormous margin.
Brett Watson, the UAA economist, says while sales taxes would be more regressive than an income tax, economic analyses have repeatedly shown that cutting the permanent fund dividend hurts lower-income Alaskans the most.
PFD cuts are by far the most regressive option.
He says if legislators really care about equity, preserving the PFD and implementing statewide taxes should be their first choice. Still, there are some costs that are hard to factor into economic analyses. People in rural, off-the-road system communities already pay much more for staples like milk and eggs, says Representative Bryce Edgman, an independent from Dillingham. He says his constituents favor a progressive income tax bill, which in its current form would put a 2% tax on income for people more than $200,000 per year. He says a sales tax option would make it even less desirable to live in places like Dillingham.
I think it's going to be harder to attract and recruit teachers and other sort of itinerant workers that come and go over time with an additional sales tax burden.
Still, he's not ruling out the idea. He says he's glad that legislators and the governor have at least opened up discussions, as painful as new taxes might be. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
A former Alaska legislator who was banned from flying on Alaska Airlines for refusing to comply with coronavirus masking policies is now suing the airline and more than a dozen of its employees. Former State Senator Laura Reinbold, a Republican from Eagle River, says in her federal civil complaint filed Friday that the airline violated her constitutional rights and caused her stress and humiliation. Reinbold is representing herself in the lawsuit and asking for at least $6.5 million in damages from each of the 15 defendants for a total of at least $97.5 million. According to the lawsuit, Reinbold had a medical condition that she says made breathing through a mask difficult. The lawsuit says Reinbold was getting ready to board a flight out of Juneau on April 22, 2021, when she asked an Alaska Airlines check-in agent about an exemption to the airline's mask requirements. Ultimately, Reinbold was told that she needed to wear a mask and she was allowed to board the flight. A video of the interaction posted on social media shows Reinbold arguing with several Alaska Airlines employees. According to the lawsuit, Reinbold's reserved flight back to Juneau disappeared from her bookings the next day, and she received a letter saying that she'd been banned from flying on Alaska Airlines, which had the only regularly scheduled flights to Juneau. As a legislator, she was due back in Juneau a few days later, and after trying unsuccessfully to negotiate with the airline, Reinbold drove hundreds of miles and boarded a ferry to get back to the capital. Various attempts to reach Reinbold today were unsuccessful. Alaska Airlines declined to comment. Reinbold served in the Alaska legislature first as a member of the House from 2013 to 2019, and then in the Senate from 2019 to 2023, when she retired. As Alaska wildfire seasons grow more intense, access to air quality data is crucial for communities trying to limit smoke exposure. But in most of rural Alaska, that data is sparse or difficult to access. A University of Alaska Anchorage environmental health professor is hoping to change that. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George reports.
Dr. Micah Hahn knows that when it comes to climate resilience, that is, preparing and adapting for the impacts of climate change like worsening wildfires, communities need data.
And right now, most communities in Alaska don't have access to that real-time information to know, how bad is it outside? Should I go to fish camp? Should I go collect berries right now? Or should I maybe wait till tomorrow when the smoke is better? People can't make even basic daily decisions because they don't have access to that information.
Hahn recently secured an EPA grant to work with scientists and individual communities to build an online tool to monitor climate hazards like smoke and track community health across the state. She's hoping it will give rural communities a better picture of how wildfires are affecting them over time by following, for example, asthma prevalence, mental health, or ecological health impacts. Hahn is also hoping that having easy access to data will help communities get more climate resilience funding.
And for them to be able to easily go to a data set where they can, make a map of their community or pull out some historical fire information and say, this has been a problem in our community, and it's projected to be a problem in the future. As a result, we were requesting funding for X, Y, and Z.
But in order to present this kind of data in a tool, Hahn needs monitors to collect it. That's where the State Department of Environmental Conservation comes in. They're working to expand the air quality monitoring network into rural Alaska. The state maintains EPA standard air quality monitoring in Anchorage, the Mat-Su, Fairbanks, and Juneau. But air quality can vary widely, and monitoring elsewhere in the state is patchy. DEC has set up about 15 monitors in coastal rural communities over the last few years, and they're waiting on funding from a separate EPA grant to build out a statewide network of about 40 rural monitors. Taylor Borgfeld is project lead for the rollout. She says the department can't order more monitors until they get their funding, so it's unlikely to be completed before this year's fire season.
Whether or not we're going to see that equipment this summer and a meaningful time to get much deployed is kind of a big question mark at this point. So within the next year and a couple months, we're trying to get as many, if not all of them, deployed.
Han is still in the planning phases of her project, working with rural communities to understand what they want out of an air quality monitoring tool. She's hoping as DEC rolls out more monitors and the available data becomes more robust, her team will have an interactive tool online in the next 4 years. In Anchorage, I'm Kavitha George.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Kipnuk man's viral TikToks depict native life in rural Alaska.
We got to share our culture to keep it alive, and I think it's really important. And my account just started growing and growing.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
In rural Alaska communities, village public safety officers make a difference every day. Hired regionally, VPSOs are trained in public safety services such as community policing, fire prevention, life-saving emergency medical response, and search and rescue. VPSO receive competitive pay, benefits, and opportunities for advancement. To start your career in public safety and learn more about becoming a VPSO, go to vpso.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by VPSO.
Interior Secretary Deb Haaland defended her department's approval of the contentious Willow Oil Project on Friday, saying that despite President Joe Biden's campaign promise to end new drilling on federal lands, quote, we're not going to turn the faucet off and say we're not drilling anymore. Speaking to the Society of Environmental Journalists' annual meeting in Idaho, Haaland said the Biden administration is, quote, following the science and the law when it comes to everything we do, and that includes gas and oil leases. Despite Biden's pledge, Haaland said, quote, we're not going to say we're not going to use gas and oil. That's not reality, end quote. Well, Bristol Bay had an astounding 77 million salmon return between the region's 9 most bountiful rivers last year. Over 60 million sockeye were harvested, more than double the 20-year average. While huge salmon returns are great for a sustainable run, that supply could prove a problem for processors. As KMXT's Brian Venois reports, marketing agencies are working to sell the frozen salmon before last year's harvest affects this year's prices.
Tav Amu started his fishing career in the 90s and now captains his own drift boat. He says the 2021 season set high expectations when last year's forecast was announced, but he just wasn't in the right place at the right time for the big bursts.
I was expecting to be kind of overflowing with fish all the time, which it wasn't. I didn't have my biggest single day or biggest single set or anything last year.
Amu says although he missed some of the larger pushes of salmon, his boat still had its best season yet.
It was consistent, but not super high any given day. So probably different than what you'd expect from the highest run.
Last year, the fleet was paid about $1.15 per pound, a bit less than they did the year before. But with a record harvest of over 60 million sockeye, a lot of fishers like Amu are wondering if that huge supply is still lingering in warehouses. That could affect their paychecks this year. The Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association is a fleet-funded marketing association with a direct focus on Bristol Bay salmon. BBRSDA's marketing director, Lilani Dunn, says members of the fleet have shared concerns about prices both directly to staff and during member comment periods in their board meetings.
You know, there's always going to be concern with an excess inventory because it typically will affect ex-vessel prices.
Ex-vessel price is the dollar value of commercial harvest before it gets processed. Dunn says the Marketing Association is working especially close with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to sell as much frozen stock as possible. ASME's research shows inflation is another concern. Most Americans are concerned about saving money at the grocery store, so they're working to help consumers save money on salmon. Megan Ryder is ASME's domestic marketing director. Ryder says ASME is working with coupon agencies to stir demand among new customers.
Consumers are responding to inflation by prioritizing value options, taking advantage of shopping promotions, and especially turning to coupons.
As we expected, about 12% of folks who receive coupons to redeem them, but Ryder says so far they've been selling double that mark.
Maybe they're a little bit more inclined to put some wild Alaska sockeye salmon in their cart because they have this coupon, so they can, you know, it just makes the path to purchase a little bit easier and the choice a little bit more compelling.
Increasing and stirring demand in the face of a massive supply is a classic way to balance markets, but there are a lot of factors that go into how much fishers are paid. Gunnar Knapp was an economics professor at the University of Alaska Anchorage for over 35 years. Knapp says despite marketing efforts, another large harvest this year could push prices for Bristol Bay sockeye down.
If we come in and we get another larger than expected harvest, that could be great from a fishing point of view, but bad from a market point of view and bad from a pricing point of view.
Knapp also points out it's expensive to hold that much fish in freezers and warehouses, so processors might have to cut costs in other ways. But he says there's no way to know what processors will pay this summer. Knapp says it's normal for sockeye prices to vary by about 10 to 15 cents season to season, but it's too early to guess how much it'll change this year. Amu says regardless of the price, fishers like him have to commit to the season long before they know what their checks will look like.
The downside of it is that we don't know the price until after we've already done the planning and preparing and everything, right? While it is there in the back of the mind, it's not as forefront as you might think.
The forecast for the 2023 Bristol Bay salmon run is 51 million sockeye, but that could range as high as 65 million fish. Amu says all he can do for now is to continue hoping for a decent price and to keep up with the big pushes of sockeye this year. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Elementary schoolers in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District will learn to read under a new program beginning next school year. The new program comes with money from the state to help purchase materials, and the district says the program is more aligned to what it calls a science of reading approach. KDLL's Sabine Pooks has more.
The school district reviews its curriculum every 6 years in every subject, and it was due to take another look at its core English curriculum this fall. That includes the teacher guides and student workbooks it purchases for all the schools across the district. Melissa Linton is the district's curriculum coordinator. She says the district's current elementary ELA program does not have a strong enough foundational skills component to teach students skills like phonics and phonemic awareness. The district also wanted to take advantage of a grant from the state that will help pay for materials, which is why it's looking into the revision now. At a work session earlier this month, Superintendent Clayton Holland said the grant will help while the district faces significant funding troubles.
The grant for us is going to be close to $1 million to cover the cost of what we're doing. It's very significant.
The district had its choice between four programs that were vetted by the state. Linton says the district has been soliciting input from teachers on those programs since January, as well as from parents. An ELA materials committee with teachers from across the district narrowed the program choices down to two, then picked the Core Knowledge Language Arts Amplify program, or CKLA, using a review process and a rubric. Linton says the ELA committee chose the program for a few reasons. She says the committee found foundational skills materials strong and coherent, teacher guides easy to read and clear, and she says the committee found content well integrated from grade to grade with what she called background knowledge. That's information about the topics students might be reading about and tested on in national tests like ACT and SAT. That background knowledge was a sticking point for some people who testified at a school board meeting last week. Mountain View teacher Donna Anderson pointed out parts of the first grade curriculum that reference the study of the religion of Babylon, as well as Christianity, Judaism, and Islam.
My concern is not with the skills section. My concern is with the appropriateness of disguising teaching history and reading comprehension with the study of religion.
Carrie Denderant, the district's assistant superintendent, said her office will be working with staff across the district to make sure they address concerns as they pop up.
So I think the biggest piece of it is we are hearing you. We do feel that this is a great curriculum. However, there are going to be some things that we have to do that we have to make adjustments to.
Linton says the next step is to start working with teachers on the new program in August. She says other Alaska districts are reviewing and considering adopting CKLA as well. Separately, the district will be reviewing their response to intervention program to make sure students in the district are meeting the goals of the 2022 Alaska Reads Act to get Alaskan students reading proficiently by the third grade. In Kenai, I'm Sabine Pooks.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
Construction season is here, Alaska. Avoid surprises on the drive. Before getting on your way, check 511 for traffic delays. For current traffic information and road conditions, visit 511.alaska.gov or download the app or call 511. For more detailed information about DOT construction projects, visit dot.alaska.gov/construction. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Transportation and Public Facilities.
A new report by the Alaska Earthquake Center shows it was a quiet year for earthquakes in 2022. Last year alone, there were over 47,000 earthquakes in Alaska and surrounding regions. The Alaska Beacon reports that the number, while large, is actually a slight decrease in seismic activity compared to recent years when activity has been high. Natalia Rupert, a seismologist with the Alaska Earthquake Center at the University of Alaska Fairbanks Geophysical Institute, said there are years that experience higher activity, like 2018, which was notable for its large earthquake near Anchorage, and there are years of lower activity. But she said the past 5 years have seen an increased spike in recorded seismic activity. There are two reasons for this, according to Rupert. In part, that's due to better detection from more seismic stations in Alaska than in previous years. Another reason for increased seismic activity is aftershocks. Alaska has seen a few big earthquakes in the past 5 years, including an earthquake in 2021 that had a magnitude of 8.2. Rupert said that large magnitude earthquakes generate more aftershocks, which can carry on for years after the initial earthquake. Because of the unpredictable nature of the earthquakes, even in quiet years like last year, Rupert still emphasized the need for the public to pay attention to earthquake activity. A young Yupik man from Kipnuk joined TikTok in 2020, making videos of his everyday life living in a rural village just for fun. As KNBA's Jill Freitas reports, he couldn't have predicted the following he would grow.
Martin Paul, Yupik from Kipnuk, Alaska, is a well-known TikToker. At just 19 years old, he has over 140,000 followers and growing. A majority of his videos are funny native humor skits, but he also shares what it's like living in a rural village, including his Yupik culture and dancing. Paul says he never imagined his videos would go viral.
I started just wanting to share the Yupik culture, the native culture, on my platform. You know, we got to share our culture to keep it alive, and I think it's really important. And my account just started growing and growing because people kind of found that kind of thing interesting.
Martin shares videos of riding on snow machines and four-wheelers, the only form of transportation in his village, as well as videos of him going out in negative 20-degree weather to get ice.
In most of rural Alaska, there is no running water still. So what do? We get ice. There's other ways to get water, but the place I am in right now, Kipnuk, Alaska, we get water from ice.
As for Paul's funny native humor skits, he says he gets his ideas from various places.
A lot of the skits I do are kind of like memories that I've had in the past or like experiences that I've had, or I'd hear a story from my parents or my grandparents and I'd kind of like act it out in a way and just say whatever's on my mind, and, you know, the native humor would just kind of come out.
Like this skit about being a native weatherman.
Native weather report. Super windy. The wind is winding. Probably about 30 knots with a wind chill of 20. And it's slippery, so, you know, you got to be careful because, you know, you might just end up slipping into my arms.
Paul finds a balance on his channel sharing funny and informative content. But he says that because of his elders, he wants to make sure sharing his culture goes above all else.
The elders would always tell me to, like, keep the culture alive. Because, like, I grew up Yupik dancing. And I was always encouraged by my elders to, like, always keep the songs alive because they go way back. And it's just so important to keep it alive, basically.
He says the best thing to come out of his channel is when people from all over the world reach out to say what his videos have done for them.
Quite a bit of people that have told me that, hey, your videos make me happy when I'm sad. They'd say, like, oh, the song you posted was so relatable to me. There was a few people that nearly made me cry. They're like, your song saved me, or, like, your videos. I don't know. It's just hearing that, it meant so much to me.
Paul is taking a break from college to be with family and spend time in his hometown and continues to share his culture, humor, and life. In Anchorage, I'm Jill Freitas.
A pair of GNOME students were recognized this past weekend in Fairbanks for projects they entered in the Alaska Innovation Competition. KNOM's Greg Knight tells the story of two young innovators that are bringing bright ideas to Arctic Alaska.
GNOME's Denali Walrath and Bradley Rowe took part in the competition, with Walrath taking first place in the Cub Division, which is 12 years old and under, with her Animal Alert app idea. As one of the top finishers, Walrath's award included $500 cash and a $2,000 contribution to her Alaska 529 college savings plan. Walrath is a fifth grader at Anvil City Science Academy. She says she came up with the idea late last year while picking berries with her family in Nome. The app would alert users if a dangerous animal, like a bear or muskox, had been spotted recently at a specific location.
I first got the idea when there was attacks. There was a person who got attacked walking to the Nome Elementary School, and that really, like, made me think of the actual idea for the alert, like, to alert them of the animal.
Denali's dad, Doug, says she will get assistance from university students and faculty to patent the app, code it, and release it.
It's an ideas competition, so when she finished, she was speaking with some of the faculty at UAF in the engineering department, and they noted how they would have undergraduate students or graduate students that could work with her in the future doing the programming, the coding, the part that as an 11-year-old you just don't have.
Rowe, a second grader at Nome Elementary School, took honorable mention in the division for his renewable snow cone machine idea. His idea involves a machine that churns up fresh snow using snowblower blades, pulls the snow into the machine, rolls it into balls, and puts them into snow cone cups and adds flavoring on top. Rowe's dad, Russell, explained how Bradley was encouraged to take on the project to make snow days more enjoyable.
It was presented to him through Nome Elementary School. Miss Sophia at his STEM class presented the idea to him to join this competition, and he had an idea to make a snow cone machine. And the idea was to make snow days fun for everyone across the state.
The competition began in 2009 and makes awards of $45,000 in cash and prizes each year. Ideas do not need to be Arctic-related. It's free to enter, and individuals and teams of all ages can compete. Reporting in Nome, I'm Greg Knight.
And finally tonight, a correction to a story Thursday about chum salmon numbers in western Alaska that incorrectly named a University of Washington researcher as Dr. David Schindler. His name is, in fact, Dr. Daniel Schindler. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Lex Trinan, Kavitha George, and Jill Freitas in Anchorage, Brian Venois in Kodiak, Sabine Pooks in Kenai, and Greg Knight in Nome. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Tim Rocky is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com.
And by
Alaska Air Cargo, serving the commerce and business needs of 20 Alaska communities, from Adak to Barrow to Ketchikan. More information at alaskacargo.com.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.